Take your Bibles out tonight now and open to the book of Daniel chapter 11. We are continuing to study this great book here in the Old Testament. And we come here to chapter 11. And tonight I want to just continue on and talk tonight about the coming of the Antichrist. Because that's what we're getting into here in this part of chapter 11. The coming of the Antichrist. I believe as we look out today in the world and see the things that are going on in our world today, that the stage is being set for the coming of the Antichrist. In fact, someone passed along some articles to me, and I'm sure you probably have read some of this, where it's an article about Tony Blair. And basically the caption reads, "I'll be president of Europe if you give me the power." And the article goes on to state that he has been holding discussions, that is Tony Blair, with some of his oldest allies on how he could mount a campaign to become the full president of the EU. That's a very prestigious position that is opening up. And so it very well could be that by the end of this year, perhaps the beginning of next year, that we will have, or Europe will have, the first president of the EU, which is Tony Blair. Now, this doesn't surprise us, at least it shouldn't surprise us, because we know that the Bible says that there will be a leader of the revived Roman Empire, the leader of a united Europe. Now, I don't believe that Tony Blair is the Antichrist, but I believe that the Antichrist will occupy the position that is being created, that Tony Blair will occupy perhaps and be the first president of the European Union. Now, that all just fits within Bible prophecy. And that's why I say I think the world is being prepared. The stage is being set for the coming of the Antichrist. And we approach that subject as we come here to chapter 11 and verse number 36. Now, you remember that we studied up to verse 35. But between verses 35 and verse 36, the angel speaks to Daniel, but he leaps across centuries to pinpoint the final persecutor of Israel. And of course, as I said, this will be the Antichrist. He is the notorious tyrant who will come, the most vicious and cruel leader that the world will ever know. He will be all the evil power of Ahasuerus, Alexander, Antioch the Great, Antiochus Epiphanes, all these Christless conquerors that we have studied here in chapter 11 up until this point. He will be all of those men rolled up into one. He'll be worse than all of them. And you know, according to the Bible, he will make a covenant with Israel in the last days, and in the middle of the 7-year tribulation, he will break that covenant. He will blaspheme God. He will turn against the Jewish people. He will persecute them and with a satanic hatred for them. And so, again, I think that we're coming to that time in history. And so I want us to see this here in Daniel chapter 11. There are three things I want to point out here. First of all, I want to talk about the chronology of his coming, the coming Antichrist. Secondly, I want to talk about the character of his coming. And then thirdly, the conflict that will happen at his coming. We probably won't get to all three of those tonight, but we'll go as far as we can. First of all, the chronology of his coming. Again, look in verse number 36 of chapter 11. "And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished, for that is determined shall be done." First of all, the chronology. Now, up until the point that we get to verse 35, there is agreement by scholars on all of the interpretation of the prophecy that we studied thus far. There's been agreement about who these men stand for up until you get to verse 35. But then when you get to verse 36, there's a divide among scholars about who we're talking about. And the big question is in verse 36, who is this king? Now, there are two views about who this could be. First of all, the first view is what is called the Maccabean view. And they see verse 36 down to verse 45 as being a reference to Antiochus Epiphanes. In other words, there's no stop. Verses 21 down to verse 35 referred to Antiochus Epiphanes, that horrendous leader that persecuted the Jewish people. But they continue to see verses 36 down to verse 45 as a continuation of the same thing. In other words, no change. This is still all talking about the same person. That's one view. But then there's a second view that says when you get to verse 36, We're not talking about Antiochus Epiphanes anymore. Now we're talking about the Antichrist. The angel jumps from talking about prophecies that will be fulfilled in 200 years to prophecies that will be fulfilled in 2,000 years. He jumps a huge jump in the future. And so you say, well, preacher, who do you believe verse 36 is referring to? I am persuaded and convinced that when you get to verse 36, you're no longer talking about Antiochus Epiphanes. Now you're talking about somebody different. The king that's being referred to from this point on is now the Antichrist. Now, the question might come, why do you believe that? What's the evidence within the passage that would lead you to believe that there's a jump here? Well, let me just give you a few lines of reasoning, a few arguments, okay? Ready for these? Number one, there's what I call the phrase, the time of the end. We see that phrase appear. In the end of verse 35, we see that phrase, even to the time of the end. And then we also see it in verse 40. And at the time of the end shall be the king of the south push, shall the king of the south, push at him. And so we see that phrase pop up. So this is referring to a later time. This is a term of eschatology, an eschatological term, we could say. It's referring to a time that is later than the time that was given there in previous verses. And so one writer writes, exegetical necessity requires that verse 36 to 45 be applied to someone other than Antiochus IV. And so I agree with that. The context indicates that the ruler that we're talking about now is a ruler that will appear in the latter days. Okay? That's one thing. In fact, look in chapter 12, verse 1. And at that time shall Michael stand up. And this is still really the whole context of these verses. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which standeth for the children of thy people. And there shall be a time of trouble. Question, what time is he referring to in chapter 12, verse 1? He's referring to the tribulation, right? The time of trouble there is the time of the tribulation. And so that draws it all the way out into the end. That's the whole context of it. All right, let me give you the second thing. This is what I call the scope of prophecy. The scope of the prophecy goes beyond the Persian and Greek eras. I mean, this whole scope is much wider now. Look in chapter 10, verse 14. Notice what the angel says to him in chapter 10, verse 14. We'll remind you of this. Now I am come to make thee understand what shall befall thy people when? In the latter days. Daniel, this is going to stretch out all the way into the latter days. All right? That's what the angel is telling Daniel. This is going to stretch far. The scope of this prophecy goes beyond just the Persian era. It goes beyond just the Greek era. It goes much farther than that. And then there's another argument I would use, and that is the historical record. The historical record. You say, what do you mean by that? Well, as we've been studying chapter 11, we have found that all the prophecies that have been given, we can find the historical fulfillment, right? I mean, you've been here in these studies? Some of you may have felt like you were in a history class, because every time I would look at a prophecy, I would say, well, that was fulfilled in history and here is how it was fulfilled. And I kind of give you a summary about that. And you can trace history. You can look at these prophecies and you can trace history and see how that these have been historically fulfilled. But when you get to verse 36, history's silent. These verses are no longer traceable in history. We find no historical evidence that anything that is referred to from verse 36 to 45 has ever happened. And so you have the silence of history from verses 36 down to verse number 45. In fact, it's impossible to harmonize Antiochus Epiphanes, his life, with these verses. Let me give you an example. In verses 36 and 37, it says that Antiochus will exalt himself above every god. That is, if you believe this is referring to Antiochus Epiphanes, it says here that he will exalt himself above every god. Well, Antiochus never did that. All right? It says that this man will reject the God of his fathers and worship a God unknown to his fathers. Verse 38. Antiochus Epiphanes didn't do that. In fact, Antiochus Epiphanes, on the contrary, worshiped the Greek pantheon. And he even built an altar offering sacrifices to Zeus or Jupiter in the Jerusalem temple. And so none of those things would be fulfilled. In other words, if we believe this was Antiochus Epiphanes, then the Bible is not accurate. accurate here. And not only that, it also says at the end of verse 45 that this king will come to his end in the land of Palestine. But it's a fact of history that Antiochus Epiphanes died not in Palestine. He died in Persia. That's a fact of history. And so the conclusion then is that these verses cannot be referring to the same king that we have been talking about, Antiochus Epiphanes. This is somebody different. There's also the timing of God's final judgment. There's the phrase that is used, indignation. Look again in verse 36. And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation. Just underscore that word indignation. Some may read the wrath of God. That's the Hebrew word za'am. And this is always used synonymously to speak about God's judgment in the final days, the days of the tribulation period. Okay? It's almost always used to speak about that. Again, this is a term of eschatology. Write down Isaiah chapter 27, verses 1, and then actually the previous verses, chapter 26, 20, and 21. In fact, let's just go ahead and take some time and look at that. Just hold your place here in Daniel. Let me show you how this term indignation has been used in the Old Testament. Go to the book of Isaiah. Go back a few books and look at Isaiah chapter 27, verse 1. Follow along here with me. I think this is worthwhile taking a little detour here to look at this. Look in verse 1 of chapter 27. In that day, the Lord with his sore and great and strong sword shall punish Leviathan, the piercing serpent. Even Leviathan, that crooked serpent, and he shall slay the dragon that is in the sea. Here he's talking about his judgment, God's judgment upon Leviathan or the serpent or the dragon. Question, who is that? That's Satan, right? In the end, God will punish Satan in the day of the Lord, verse 1. But now back up in verse 20 of chapter 26, just a few verses previous. Notice what God says to Israel. Verse 20, come, my people, enter thou into thy chambers, shut thy doors about thee, hide thyself, as it were, for a little moment until the what? Indignation be overpast. Same term there. For behold, the Lord cometh out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. The Lord also shall disclose her blood and shall no more cover her slain. This is talking about the time when God and his wrath comes to punish the earth and to punish the inhabitant. Actually, that's singular in the Hebrew. The inhabitant of the earth. Who is that? Who is the inhabitant of the earth? That's Satan, right? He's going to come and punish Satan. This is, again, all talking about the end time. And God says to his people, Israel, hide yourself until the indignation be overpassed. And so just know that this term is a reference to what's going to happen at the end time when God pours out his wrath upon the earth. And again, you have to keep that time in view when you look at this passage here in Daniel chapter 11. Let me give you another reason here, and that is the resurrection following the king's death. If you go back to chapter 11, you find out when this king dies. We go to chapter 12 and verse 2. And what's going to happen in chapter 12, verse 2? There's going to be a final resurrection. Question, when does that happen? Happens at the end, right? All the way in the end. So again, we see that this is the time that's in view. There's also the similarity of description. If you read chapter 11 closely from verses 36 down, and you compare it to other passages in Daniel about the Antichrist, you notice the similarities. Daniel had described this person before. He's none other than the little horn, the ruler who will come, the lawless one spoken of in the New Testament. Okay? And then there's another reason I would give you, and that is this is the widely accepted view. It's widely accepted. That is, this was the view adopted by the early church. E.J. Young rightly calls this the traditional interpretation of the Christian church. Jerome, almost 1600 years ago, said this, quote, those of our persuasion believe all these things are spoken prophetically of the Antichrist who is to arise in the end time. Both the majority of amillennial and premillennial scholars interpret this to be the Antichrist. All right? You convinced? All right? You convinced yet? If you're not convinced, I'm done. I've given you all my arguments. All right? But I think that this is referring to the Antichrist. I really believe that with all my heart. Steve Miller, let me just give you his quote, wrote the commentary on Daniel, teaches over here at the seminary. He said, in reality, a description of the Antichrist should not be considered surprising in a context with Antiochus IV. For both of these oppressors of God's people have previously been given a prominent place in the prophecies of Daniel. And so the chronology of this coming, when's it going to happen? It's going to happen at the end. And we are approaching that time. We are getting, the world is getting ready, and the world stage is being set. It is going to happen at the end, and we're getting close. Number two, let me talk to you now about the character of his coming. The character of his coming. What kind of ruler and leader will the Antichrist be? Well, Daniel has already given us some of these characteristics, but he continues to name some here. First, again, let's go back to verse 36. Notice his power. And the king shall do according to his what? Will. He'll do whatever he wants. Let me ask you a question. What's the definition of power? Somebody that can do what? Whatever he wants. Someone who has that ability, that can just do whatever he wants to do. And this is the expression that is used other times in the book of Daniel to describe God. God was the one who does whatever he pleases. Some of the king of Persia was also attributed this, Alexander the Great. This guy will have power. He will have sovereign power. He will rule as a dictator. All of the other rulers are a foreshadowing of this man, this Antichrist. And the one common denominator that we saw in all the other kings that we studied was one thing. You know what it was? A thirst for power. A desire to be in control. I mean, we've read all those other verses about the king of the south and the king of the north, and they're constantly fighting. What are they fighting for? They're fighting for power. They're fighting for control. And the Antichrist will be the epitome of that. He will have total power. He will do whatever he wants. Imagine a man coming to the world scene that has that kind of control with all the technology that we have in the world today, with all of the missiles and the nuclear weapons that we have in our world today, having all that technology and all the weapons. And imagine this man being able to do whatever he wants to do. That's a horrible thought when you think about this man being the personification of evil. He'll do according to his will. All the governments of the world will be submitted to him. They'll be in harmony with him. Think about that. Let me ask you a question. What is behind a lot of the things that are happening in the governments of this world? You know what it is? It's Satan. It's the demonic forces. The Bible says we don't wrestle against flesh and blood. We wrestle against spiritual wickedness in what? High places. Satan strategically has his forces set up, and they're working behind the scenes, and they are trying to control, and they're trying to do their own thing. But I want to tell you something. When the Antichrist, who will be the personification of Satan, sets up shop and he comes to power, all of those governments will suddenly come under his authority. They'll come in line with him because it is his forces that are already back there pulling the strings even now. And so he'll have all of the governments behind him. Revelation 17 mentions 10 other kings who will be puppet kings of the Antichrist. In chapter 13 of Revelation, he'll be aided by a false prophet who will perhaps be the minister of propaganda for the Antichrist. And so all of this will be set for him. He will have absolute, total power. His power will be to make decisions according to what he wants. But notice his pride. Again in verse 36, and the king shall do according to his will. And he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god. Now, again, Antiochus Epiphanes was proud, but he never exalted himself above every god. But the Antichrist will. The Bible says in 2 Thessalonians 2:4, he opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped. And that's an indicator to me that this man will be satanically controlled or possessed. Because let me ask you a question. What has Satan wanted from the very beginning? He's wanted to be as God. He's wanted to be worshipped as God. That to me is a key indicator there, right? That he is a man controlled by Satan. And so this man is totally dominated by the devil. Now some of you might be sitting there thinking, how can this be? How can it be that a man will come to power, that he will have such evil intentions and cruelty, that he'll be able to deceive the world, billions of people in the world, to follow in his destructive way with his cruel intentions? How would it be that a man is able to deceive people on such a massive scale? So many different kinds of people. Well, you know, if you have trouble at that idea, all you have to do, folks, is look just a little bit back in our own modern history, right? I mean, is this unprecedented? Absolutely not. We've seen this before, right? We may have seen it on a smaller scale, but we've seen it before. And where have we seen it? Hitler is the prototype, isn't he? He is the one that has already, I think, in some form and fashion, exhibited what the Antichrist is going to be. In fact, when I was studying this about the Antichrist, I was reading some books about this part of history. And it's fascinating, folks. It really is. And if you don't mind, I'm going to share with you a little bit of what I discovered there. And several books. And let me just give you some of the books that I have been reading about this. Peace, Prosperity, and the Coming Holocaust. There's a chapter there called Hitler, the Almost Antichrist, where the writer gives some fascinating facts. There's a book called The Morning of the Magicians, written by two men, Louis Pauls and Jacques Bergier. They're not Christians, they're historians, and they write from a perspective of research. They have taken their accounts from eyewitnesses, thousands of books, records from the Nuremberg trials, and so on. And let me just give you a quote of what they say. They say, quote, "It's impossible to understand Hitler's political plans unless one is familiar with his basic beliefs and his conviction that there is a magic relationship between man and the universe." And what he's saying is that if you really want to understand Hitler, you have to go behind just the man and you have to see what was the forces that was making him do the things that he did. He went on to say he saw the miracle of his own destiny as the action of unseen forces, the same forces responsible for his preaching a new gospel to humanity, end quote. In the book by David Hunt. And by the way, what is the Antichrist going to do? He's going to unite the world politically and he's going to unite the world religiously. That is exactly what Hitler did in Germany. Exactly what he did. The people there, they worshipped him. And one man, a French academic named Louis Bertrand, a convert to Nazism, when he was exalting his newfound Messiah, that's what he called him, said this, quote, "What sovereign, what national hero has ever been acclaimed, adulated, adored, and worshipped as Hitler? This little man in the brown shirt. This is something altogether different from mere popularity. This is religion. In the eyes of his admirers, Hitler is a prophet, the partaker of the divine," end quote. And so if ever a man was worshipped, it was Hitler. Someone said, if it went for a few miscalculations, he would have ruled the world. Another writer said, "There's no normal explanation for the staggering mystery that was Hitler. An inept, bumbling ex-corporal with obsessive delusions rising out of obscurity to make the entire world tremble." Bewildered historians have asked the question, how could a man so ignorant, so enslaved by stupid dogmas, have ever achieved such practical success? I was reading another writer where he said he read Mein Kampf, the book that he wrote, My Struggle, and he found it to be written by a third-rate mind, and he was bewildered how this kind of a intellect could ever dupe people the way Hitler did. And how could that happen? Well, the answer is it wasn't his power, right? There was a power behind the person. There was something behind him that was doing all that. Let me just give you some facts. Joseph Goebbels, the Nazi minister of propaganda, confided in a aide-de-camp one day, and this is what he said, quote, "I see him every day," talking about Hitler. He said, "I see him almost every day, and still there are times when he loses me completely. Who can claim to know him as he really is? Is he really human? I would not want to swear on it. There are times when he gives me chills." Another, one of the closest to Hitler, came to believe that he was manipulated by invisible forces. That they called those forces the unknown superiors, the Nazi elite. And then in another research book, it said that Hitler was ordered from higher beings to go on a special mission as the savior of Germany. And it was a fact that Hitler was raised in a village in an area described as a hotbed of mediums. When he was a boy, mystic religions and cult The occult was his obsession, and he greatly admired writers who wrote in the occult, and that's the thing that dominated his mind. There were two men that had a big impact in his life. One was a man by the name of Dietrich Eckhart. The other was Karl Haushofer. And both of these men were black magicians. Both of these men were steeped in the occult. In fact, Eckhart, one of the men that mentored him into black magic, said this. And he made a prediction about Hitler when he met him. This was 10 years before he came to power. He said, quote, "Follow Hitler, he will dance, but it is I who have called the tune. We have given him the means of communication with them." Who is them? That was the powers behind his ability. "Do not mourn for me," he said. "I shall have influenced history more than any other German." Someone said when Hitler once lay wounded during World War I, he received a supernatural vision which ordered him to be the savior for Germany. And Hitler liked to point out that he was 30 years old when that vision came. Same age as the Messiah, Jesus. And he would enjoy pointing that out. The man who picked up the reins and began to mentor him after Eckhart died was a man by the name of Haushofer. He initiated Hitler into a society that existed, it still exists in India, where you can go to India today and see swastika engraved temples and millions of members. He was the one that introduced a lot of these things to Hitler, a lot of the black magic, a lot of the things that dominated his mind. And in fact, if you study this man, Haushofer, we find out that he could actually predict the future. He had amazing psychic powers. And according to this book by Pals and Bergier, Hitler as well could predict the future. He said that Hitler predicted when the Nazi troops would conquer Paris, the occupation of the Rhineland. Hitler even predicted when Roosevelt would die. And so one writer says Haushofer was the black magician who controlled Hitler. He was the one who was behind him. Did you know that Hitler had all of his inside men in the SS make an irreversible vow in the service of Lucifer? I mean, if you study all that, you're going to find out that the whole Third Reich was dominated by the occult. They were totally into this black magic. They were totally into giving themselves over to Satan. In fact, the diary of Hitler was discovered. And in the diary, they see in his own handwriting where Hitler said, "Today I have sold my soul to the devil." Completely dominated by all this sort of thing. Let me just give you one more thing here. One of his close friends said, "You cannot help but know that Hitler was a medium and that he was possessed by forces outside of himself. He was simply the temporary vehicle," he says. And this is what an eyewitness said, quote, "A person close to Hitler told me that he wakes up in the night screaming and in convulsions. He calls for help and appears to be half paralyzed. He is seized with a panic that makes him tremble until his bed shakes. He utters confused and unintelligible sounds, gasping as if at the point of suffocation. Hitler was standing in his room, swaying and looking all around as if he were lost, saying, 'It is he, it is he, he's come for me,' he groaned. His lips were white. He was sweating profusely. Suddenly he shuddered, a string of meaningless figures, then words and scrapes of sentences. It was terrifying. Then suddenly he screamed, 'There, there, over in the corner, he's there!' All the time he was stamping his feet and screaming," end quote. And so he had in his life, according to eyewitnesses, all of the signs of someone who was being possessed and even carried along by an outside force, someone that was far, far greater than he. Friend, don't doubt that there's going to be an Antichrist. He's coming. And I want to tell you, he will be a man dominated under the control of Satan. And Hitler was just a forerunner of all that. And by the way, what has Satan's goal always been? To exalt himself, to be above God, and to destroy God's people. That was the whole agenda. Look in Daniel chapter 8 again. Let me just look at this verse again, because when you think of all this, look at the Antichrist, what it says he's going to be. Look in chapter 8 and look in verse number 24. Again, speaking of the Antichrist, this is what it says. "And his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power." Talking about the Antichrist, he's going to be a mighty guy, but it's not going to be his power. Won't be him. Whose power will it be? Well, we know who it will be. "And he shall destroy wonderfully and shall prosper and practice and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people of God. Did you know that Hitler was convinced that there was a God-man type of race that he was destined to create? And in order to do that, he had to exterminate the world of Jewish people. That was all devilish, of course, from the devil. And here the Antichrist is going to have the same agenda. He is going to destroy the holy people. It says, look in verse 25. And through his policy also, he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand. What craft is that? That's witchcraft. That's things of the devil. And so it's the same thing. Hitler is a forerunner of that. And he was someone that we could look at in modern history. And folks, again, I say there is going to be an Antichrist. Go back to chapter 11. Let me show you one other thing. We talked about his power. And we talked about his pride. He will exalt himself. But also, I want to talk to you about his profanity. Look in verse 36 again. And notice the next phrase. And he shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished. That is, he's going to speak things that are unheard of. The word marvelous there, that's the idea. Things we have not heard of. In other words, the Antichrist will spew out shockingly blasphemous things against Christ. Now, some of us may think that we've heard all that we can hear of the evil that can come out of a person's mouth with regard to Christ. But friend, I promise you that's not true, because when the Antichrist comes, he's going to spew out such blasphemous words, such monstrous things against the people of God, or against God, I should say, that the people will be astonished. He will speak blasphemy. Write down Revelation 13:6 in your margin, talking about the Antichrist. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And then notice again, we see this phrase, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished. And for that is determined, shall be done. In other words, his days are numbered. He's going to have his time. He'll have his moment on the stage. He'll be able to say what he wills and do what he wants. But his time is limited, because God has already got his destiny planned out. His destruction is already assured. And so it's just a brief time until the indignation be overpassed. That is, until the wrath of God is done. Now, here's the point, folks. Listen, when the Antichrist comes, he will be God's instrument to judge an ungodly world. Not only will God judge the Antichrist, but for a time, he's going to let him have his time on the earth. Why? Because God is using the Antichrist to punish the ungodly in the world. Why would God do that? Well, Jesus said in John 5:43, I am come in my Father's name and ye receive me not. If another shall come in his own name, him ye will receive. In other words, you know why? Because the world didn't want to accept Christ. They didn't receive the real Christ. Those that are alive in the tribulation period will be those who rejected the real Christ. And God says, okay, you reject my son, you reject the Christ, then you can have Antichrist. And Antichrist will be given free reign for a time. 2 Thessalonians 2:10, with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth that they might be saved. And for this cause, God shall send them strong delusion that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believe not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. In other words, Paul is saying, listen, God's going to allow Satan to have that time. There will be a time when God will send a strong delusion. They'll believe a lie, and God will let it be so because the people loved unrighteousness. They had pleasure in unrighteousness. They would not receive the truth. They would not receive the Christ. And so God will allow the Antichrist to have a party. And that will be part of God's judgment on the world. And when God's done with him, when God's done allowing the Antichrist to do what he wants, to judge the world, then the Antichrist will be destroyed. God will take him out. And that's what Daniel means here in verse 36. Till the indignation be accomplished, for that is determined, shall be done. God will be the one who will play the final note, friends. He'll be the one that will take care of everything in the end. I was reading about the children of the great composer Bach. They found the easiest way to get their father's attention was to play a few lines on the piano and leave the last note unplayed. That would always arouse him. He would get up, go over to the piano, and bing, hit the final note. Well, friend, let me tell you something. In the end, it will be God who will wake up. It seems to the world that he'll be asleep. He's not asleep. He's in control. But in the end, it'll be God who will play the final note. The Antichrist will be destroyed. God will set up his kingdom on earth, and there'll be 1,000 years of peace under the reign of Jesus Christ. Well, we'll pick up the rest of these verses here next week, but let's bow for prayer tonight.
Thank you for listening to the Ellendale Pulpit with Dr. Jerry Harmon. If this message has been a blessing to you, we would love to hear from you. We invite you to call us at 901-386-4676 or send us an email at the following address, sermons@ellendalebaptist.org. If you are in the Memphis area, we invite you to come visit with us at Ellendale Baptist Church. We are located at 3861 Broadway Road in Bartlett, Tennessee. Our Sunday worship services are at 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. Our pastor, Dr. Jerry Harmon, prays that God's richest blessings will be yours.